What the Health with Gabby Allen on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome to What the Health. As you might be able to hear straight away, I am not Gabby. But what you might know from social media is that Gabby has been announced as being a contestant on Love Island All Stars. So she is in South Africa getting prepared for that. So I am Clara Hermit. I'll be with you for the next hour on What the Health. You might know me from my show, which has taken over social media. It's called In Bed with Clara, where I interview people in a bed, obviously. If you have seen some of that, hopefully you've enjoyed it. And we are here to talk about health and fitness, which is something that I am incredibly passionate about. As a qualified PT, although that's not my job anymore, health and fitness has become something that I do, not just to stay physically fit and healthy, but really, really, it's something that I do for my mental health as well. And I think it's incredibly important. Now, you know, on this show every week, we're joined by a range of guests to dissect the latest fitness trends, separate facts from myths, and give you advice on how to achieve your health goals. And on the show today, a little bit later on, I'm going to be joined by Anton Ferdinand, former professional footballer and Dancing on Ice contestant, and Ash Newburn. She's the founder of Ash Rides London. But right now, on the show, it's time for this week's Myth Busters. We're going to be discussing all things New Year, the pressure to get back in the gym or get in the gym. And joining me to discuss this is Beth Robinson, online fitness coach. Hello, Beth. How are you?
Hiya, I'm good, thanks. Thank you for having me.
No worries. I'm so glad you're here with us because I think at this time of year, people can be feeling a lot of pressure from all angles, especially because social media is the thing now. And we see what other people are up to and we really feel like we have to kind of, you know, jump on board. What do you feel about New Year's resolutions when it comes to making them, setting them and, you know, feeling pressure to have some, I suppose?
Yeah, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, really, because I like setting new goals. I set new goals for myself every year and I love a new fitness goal. But there is all this pressure, especially to like change your body in the new year, which I'm not a massive fan of, especially from PTs, media, all of the weight loss adverts that you see coming out. Like that can be like quite unbearable for a lot of people that have struggled with their relationship with food, a relationship with their body, people that exist in a larger body like me. It can be really difficult and it feel like a lot of pressure, but you've got to navigate it in a way that feels good for you. And for me, that's kind of looking at it, what do you enjoy, what would you like to get into, and maybe look at it from a place of joy rather than punishment and trying to change yourself.
I think that's a brilliant way to kind of look at things. How did you first get into fitness, Beth?
So I was sporty in my teenage years and then I struggled a lot with feeling like I've always been like a bigger person, but more like broad shouldered, bigger. And then through university, I kind of fell out of it again. And then I got back into it when I found CrossFit in about 2016. And initially I got into it for weight loss and went down a bit of a dangerous path, like spiraling towards my eating disorder. But now I'm out the other side and now I just do it for fun and enjoyment and also competition a little bit still. So it's been a journey.
I love the fact that the element of competition is still in there because that can make things, you know, more fun and enjoyable if that's your thing, right? Like for some people, it's not at all. But for other people, it's like that's the thing that brings them joy. So, you know, obviously you've told us a little bit about your own fitness journey. What made you then want to become a personal trainer so you could work with other people?
I noticed there was this big gap where people in larger bodies that can't lose weight, maybe because they've got an eating disorder, maybe for other reasons, or just don't want to engage with that. They struggle to find someone that will meet them where they're at and just help them train for performance instead of for changing their appearance. A lot of people just want to get fit and healthy to feel good and to live their life and to enjoy their life. And that I realized nobody was out there doing that. When you go into a gym in a larger body, people always assume that you want to lose weight when actually a lot of people just want to be able to run around after their kids. So that's what inspired me, like basically a gap in the market and people needing it.
I think it's so interesting to hear you say that because I feel like for a lot of people, if we switched our motivation for exercise to just, you know, feeling better, then I think it would be easier for people to stay consistent. And I kind of have this conversation with people on a regular basis where it's like, you know, if your internal voice is punishment and you must do this and, you know, you look terrible and this is the only way you're then it's going to be really hard to stick at something. Whereas if your internal voice is, yay, you know, you're getting stronger and you're here and you've shown up, and it's such a different experience, isn't it?
Yeah, and something I do with a lot of my clients is celebrating those little wins, because berating yourself, punishing yourself, that actually leads to less adherence. You're less likely to continue the thing that you're trying to do if you're horrible to yourself, but you're more likely to continue with it if you celebrate those little milestones along the way. So maybe it is that you showed up. Maybe today I did like half a Hyrox, which is the race that I'm doing in a couple of weeks, and I'm really proud that I got through some of the movements and the runs felt easier. It didn't all go well, but by picking out little bits that did go well, it encourages us to keep going back. And that's something that anybody at home that really wants to stick at exercise can start doing. Just pick something small to celebrate each session you go.
But I love the fact also that you've said, like, with that training session, rather than focus on the things that didn't go right, you're choosing to focus on the things that did and get excited about them. And that's going to put you in better stead, you know, the next time that you take on a training session like that. And it's really, I think, the kind of idea that fitness and our body and our mind are separate, you know, is that idea is getting more and more alien now, because it becomes so apparent that they're so linked, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. So I struggle with mental health. I've got a bipolar disorder, PTSD, and obviously eating disorders. And exercise is one of the biggest things that helps support my mental health. I literally can't not do it, to the point where I did it. I exercised the whole way through pregnancy, completely safely, because I know exactly what I'm doing. But it's just so important. And I think for a lot of people that struggle with mental health, once they get into exercise, it becomes like not a form of medication, because medication is totally valid, but something that can help and support that journey and help us get back into a mentally better place.
Yeah,
which I think can only be a good thing.
Exactly. And I always like to think of it as a bit of an anchor for me anyway. It's like if I'm being consistent in that, yes, there's lots of other things that can help me, but exercise is one of the things. And again, it doesn't have to be a really hard session, or, you know, I'm not trying to hit a particular goal. I'm just going because it makes me feel good and it helps keep me, you know, on the grounded, I guess, and anchored in who I am. And I think that's, you know, really important. Something that I absolutely love about you and I think is incredible is that you previously competed on SAS, Who Dares Wins, which, you know, it's a TV show, but let's be honest, it is, you know, probably the hardest TV show out there.
It's so hard.
Yeah. How did you find that experience? Oh,
amazing. I loved it. And to the point they were telling me off because I was smiling too much. But I like to suffer. I'm one of those weirdos that really likes to suffer in like a workout or anything. I've been an adrenaline junkie all my life. But it is a lot harder than it looks on TV as well. Like, you only see like 10%, and like the other, like the things are like, it's like 6 hours long, like climbing up the mountains with the logs and all of that. And you see like a tiny snippet. So you can't even imagine how hard it is, but I loved it and I would do it again tomorrow.
Well, the fact that you were smiling too much, they're probably like, no, they're going to think these are set up and, you know, we're faking it because you look too happy. Can you look a bit more like you're suffering?
You're suffering more. I just enjoy that.
I'm having the best possible time. And I think something like that, again, obviously it's physical, but it's like your mind gives out before your body, doesn't it? And what did you learn about yourself from that whole process?
Oh, so much. Actually, that is a bit of a cornerstone in my life, because my PTSD spiraled out of control shortly after that. But that was because I confronted it. I had a fight with the SAS operative, turned out to be, he was the mole at the time, Jay. And like that, it just completely changed my life in so many ways. So I had to go into therapy after doing that. And I'm a different person. It kind of started this wheel where I started to be more compassionate to myself, because I was really hard on myself and really pushed myself, and something about it made me realise I needed a different approach to my life.
Well, that's incredible though. I mean, I think sometimes those things, you know, when people say everything happens for a reason, I'm not entirely sure I agree with that. But, you know, when things like that happen, it's kind of like, I feel like we're in a place in our life where we can deal with it. It's not easy. Like you said, it's, you know, you have to I guess, really do a lot of hard work, get the right support, etc. But you come out the other side having processed and dealt with stuff that I guess for a long time was repressed and you were holding on to. So I'm sure that's not what people expected when you go on like a TV show like that. But obviously,
in a weird way, I think I joined the show because I was running away from what I was dealing with, and it made me confront it, which I think was a good thing.
Yeah, it was like you're like, no, I'm going to go and do this so I can avoid it, and actually, it was like, nope, I will meet you face on, and you will have to deal with me. So we are in a new year, and we spoke about at the start of this interview, obviously, this kind of idea of New Year's resolutions and fitness. Do you think it's harmful that the two are intrinsically kind of linked? Because, you know, your New Year's resolution could be about anything. It doesn't have to be fitness. And yet it seems to be at this time of year, that's the main focus everywhere for everything.
Yeah, I think it is a bit harmful. I think it's a bit of a pushback from Christmas when we kind of feel a bit sluggish and a bit bad for maybe like overindulging, which I don't like that as a thing in general. But I think most people tend to eat more than they normally would eat at Christmas. Therefore, when we get to January, you feel this need to sort of change and like do a 180 flip, which is unsustainable. But it is what a lot of people feel, and I'm not totally against New Year's resolutions and people having a bit of a fresh start in January. Any time of the year is a good opportunity for a fresh start, but I feel like we could do without all of this pressure to change our whole life around like immediately in January and feel bad about ourselves and feel like our body needs fixing and all of that.
Yeah, as if we have to fix ourselves rather than, I guess, like we spoke about at the start of this, choosing things that bring you joy, that bring you excitement, that you feel good about. You mentioned
and doing something sustainable that we can do until we're like 80.
Yeah.
Like, let's look at fitness not as something we just do in January and then give it up. Most people give up like after 2 weeks. So what, 19th? Like, let's look at it as like a long-term thing. How can I make this enjoyable, something that I want to do, something that I go back to, that it increases your lifespan and also helps you be an independent old lady. Like, that's what we want, really.
Yeah, definitely. And I was going to ask you how, because you said at the start of this, you like to set yourself some goals, etc. I was going to ask how you do that in a way that feels good.
I just pick a couple of things throughout the year that kind of fits with the sort of way my training schedule, like I want it to be. So I gave birth 6 months ago and I decided I wanted to do a high rocks I wanted to do one 9 months postpartum, but I got a ticket 7 months postpartum.
So you're like, okay.
So it's in 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
And then I started Couch to 5K because I needed to start running for high rocks. And to celebrate the end of my Couch to 5K journey, I booked a 5K race, which unfortunately got postponed. It was in December, but I just did that last weekend. So I think about exercise and fitness as like a celebration of what my body can do. And like competitions are an extension of that. So how am I celebrating being 7 months postpartum? I'm doing a high rocks competition.
Which is incredible because they are not easy. I've got a couple of friends who are really into hydrox and the training is really serious. You know, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not
I'm entered in the pro category as well, which is probably a terrible decision, but I've done one before and the weights are heavy and I'm a weightlifter and I wanted to do the weights that I did before.
Sounds like a great idea. It sounds like you're challenging yourself. And I think, you know, for me, it's incredible to see what women can do. Because I think when I think about postpartum, I think about the pressure to lose weight and the pressure for your body to look a certain way. But I think what I love hearing from you and obviously the energy when you talk about it as well, this is about, you know, what my body can do and how incredible my body is in terms of strength and fitness and ability. And that's the kind of thing that makes me feel, you know, really good. And that's how I wish all women could kind of look at fitness in their bodies.
Me too. That's one of my main aims. And like running is one of the things that's really hard to get back into postpartum as well. And that's kind of why, because Hyrox has a lot of running it. That's why I wanted it to be a goal. But yeah, like I wish more women postpartum could think about strength and fitness and just being able to be active with their child rather than trying to shrink themselves.
Yeah, it's a really, really important point. And I think something that a message obviously you're getting out there, and I hope that more and more people hear that message. Just quickly, Beth, before you go, for anyone who's listening who might want to get into the gym, but they've got gym anxiety or they want to get into fitness, they want to start something new, what would be your advice to them?
You've got to start where you're at. So if you're in a place where you're feeling like the gym is too much, maybe do something at home. So I, in January, obviously, as we all do, launched something in January. I launched an at-home workout program for people that, because I realised a lot of people were struggling to get into the gym. So you can do something with like just a dumbbell or just body weight at home and then build up to going into the gym. If you feel like you can go to the gym, but you're worried about what to do, then maybe go into a small corner section, find somewhere you feel comfortable. So it might be like the dumbbells in the corner, it might be like another room, like maybe there's a classroom that's super quiet, take some over there and just build up gradually to what you want to be doing. So maybe eventually you want to be in the squat rack, start with dumbbells doing some squats, and even if you're just there for like 10-15 minutes, you're there, and then we're slowly building on that until your confidence improves and you get to the point where you want to be, and celebrating those little wins along the way, as well as reflecting on each session and being proud of what you did accomplish. So turning up to the gym and just walking on the treadmill for a bit would be an achievement if you're struggling with anxiety. So yeah,
great advice, absolutely great advice. Beth, quickly before you go, let people know where they can find you.
So I'm on Instagram, YouTube. I'm Sporty Beth pretty much everywhere, so if you just search that, you'll find me.
Sporty Beth, thank you so much for being with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Wishing you a very happy new year and good luck for the Hydrox.
Thanks.
Bye. That was the incredible Beth Robinson there, online coach. Coming up on the show, I'm going to be joined by Ash Newburn, who's the founder of Ash Rides, after this break.
FUPAR Radio. Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my SAS sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either, because obviously I can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back, and we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets? I went back to the bloke, said, yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do. What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
That money show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
I'd love to ask for people that look at you, what's one tip you would say to someone that potentially wants to be a future Chancellor of the Exchequer?
I guess I would just encourage all people, but particularly young women, because I'm the first ever woman to be Chancellor of the Exchequer, and the post has existed for 800 years.
Oh, wow.
Just to say to all young women and girls, there's no ceiling on your ambition. You can achieve whatever you want. Aim high, dream big, and you can realise your dreams too.
Keeping fitness fun. What the Health with Gabby Allen.
It's actually Clara Hermit in for Gabby Allen because Gabby is doing Love Island All Stars. So you've got me for the next couple of weeks and hopefully you're glad about it. You know, I've got some great guests on the show today and I'm very excited to introduce my next guest who is here for a moment of wellness. Joining me is Ash Newburn. She's the founder of Ash Rides London and she joins me in the studio. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We're here. We're in it now. And obviously, as I kind of gave away a little bit in the title there, Ash Rides London, you do spin classes.
I do. I'm a spin teacher.
You're a spin teacher, one of my favourite forms of exercise. How did you discover spin and what initially inspired you to kind of get into spin classes?
So I feel like my spin origin story isn't that interesting. So when I moved to London, which was 12 years ago now, I think, I was kind of into just exercise and movement, and I did all kinds of different forms of movement, and spin was one of them. I grew up in the northwest of England, so I'd never heard of or been to a spin class before I moved to London. So yeah, when I came, joined the local gym, I just tried a class and then fell in love with it, kind of over a period of time. Like at that time in my life, I was exercising very much from a sort of problematic kind of obsessive approach, and I was really into running, so I did a lot of running races, half marathons, I did a marathon. And when I was in that kind of running plan training regime, there wasn't much space for spin because that was cross training, so I did like one spin class a week. And then eventually when I got to a place where I was more mindful and thoughtful about what I wanted to do to move my body and making joy and enjoyment of the form of movement like the priority, that's when spin became something that I did much more of.
It's mad for me. Well, it's not mad. That's probably a bit of an exaggeration. But with spin, I think one of the best things about it is the music, right? Because the music is normally so loud and you've just got to be on beat. You can almost forget you're exercising.
Yeah, it's really immersive. And I think that it allows you to kind of, yeah, be in the moment, be present and sort of, like you say, focused on the music, the beat, rather than thinking too much about what you're actually doing. Music's a big part of it for me. Like that's, especially since I've started teaching classes myself, like it's so much fun to bring in all of your favourite artists and songs. And
you're like a DJ.
You are like a DJ. And I think that music now has such a community aspect to it. So, you know, we have, for example, I teach a lot of Taylor Swift spin classes.
Oh, I can imagine. That's very popular.
It's amazing. Yeah,
all the Swifties out there.
The Swifties are out in force.
Yeah, and singing along to all of the lyrics.
Definitely. We have a lot of singing, but also other artists like Chapel. Obviously, Chapel Rhodes had a huge year. And yeah, just bringing that kind of joy that we get and the community and the friendships and all that comes along with music, bringing it into movement, I think is something really special and unique to spin.
I love it. I'm a big fan of spin as well. And so you just mentioned there, obviously you teach spin classes. So how has becoming a full-time spin coach impacted your life?
It's been a journey. I mean, it's something that I've only been trying to make full-time for the past almost 12 months. It was a side hustle when I first started teaching. I am an ex-lawyer. I don't think you ever stop being a lawyer.
Yeah.
But I worked in law, and spin was something that I went to on my lunch break or in the evening. And then when I started teaching, I was obviously teaching at weekends in the evenings. And kind of balancing the two things was really difficult. And spin was something that helped me to like deal with the stress of my really difficult sort of emotionally draining job. But since I've started teaching full time, I've got a lot more kind of space in my life. I can dedicate a lot more to it. And it's just, yeah, I think going to work and doing something that you love is such a privilege, and it's something that I don't take for granted and I'm really grateful for. But having said that, obviously working in movement is quite a hard thing to make full time. I think most people who teach classes, whether it's spin or anything else, would probably be like, how is that person saying that they're a full time spin teacher? So yeah, I do have other things that I'm doing. Like I have a service job in a cafe whilst I'm sort of establishing the business and building it up to a level where hopefully it will be something that I can rely on solely.
It's interesting though, because I suppose you have a real insight into a lot of people who come to your classes, because like you say, originally it was your escapism. It was helping support you in a really stressful job. And there are so many people, especially in a big city like London, who are in stressful jobs and exercise is their outlet. And so I suppose you can really kind of hold that space for them, for want of a, you know, a better term, even though it's in a space.
It's the big term of the moment.
It is, thanks to Ariana. And yeah, and I think it's just, well, it's an incredible thing to be able to do for people, because it becomes, it's cathartic, isn't it? It's not just about physical, it's about the mental.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's just incredible. When it comes to spin, what are the kind of physical benefits of a spin class, apart from stress relief?
I found it funny when these questions got sent over to me to prepare, because I haven't thought about what the physical benefits of spin are for so long. It's not something that I kind of centre or talk about as a teacher.
What do you centre and talk about? The wellness benefits, the mental benefits?
Yeah, the mental health
benefits.
Let's
talk about them then. Have you done the research for them? You know that off by heart.
I mean, for me, it's just, like we've already said, it's a release. Mm. It's a moment where you can be present in your body. The joy aspect of it. I think I was chatting to one of my best friends yesterday and sort of saying, I'm preparing to go on this podcast and I want to like emphasize what's special about our classes. And she was like saying that when she talks to people about our rides, she really emphasizes that it's just so joyful. And I think the way that I teach is very sort of non-aesthetic focused. So the coaching and the language that I use in class is very nurturing, empowering, supportive, gentle, affirming, and sort of guiding people. Something that I often say in class is, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to hopefully guide you back to kind of maybe being able to feel or understand or think about what is best for you in your body in this moment, and kind of giving people autonomy. So yeah, I mean, for me, it really is about joy and sort of connection, community. Like, we have a real community around Ash Rides. There's people, you know, regulars that come and sort of get to know each other, make friends in class, like the social aspect of it. And just feeling like you're in an environment where you don't need to change anything about yourself. You know, we're not talking about changing our bodies. We're sort of helping each other move past that kind of narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important. And community, again, like, especially in London, a lot of people come here, like yourself, who are not from London. You don't necessarily have a friendship group. And then, you know, as a woman who's in my 40s and single, you get your friends go off and then they get married and they have kids, etc. So then your friendship group changes. So it's really good to have these kind of spaces that do create community where you can make new connections, meet like-minded people. And, you know, and I think that is another health benefit as well. Being lonely is not good for your health. So you kind of touched on there this whole idea of, you know, not focusing on your physical body and appearance or any of those things. And I know that, you know, you kind of refer to anti-diet culture. How does that work? What is anti-diet culture?
Okay, this is the question that I was kind of most nervous about because it's such a huge topic, but I'm going to do my best.
Go for it.
So I think before we move on to what anti-diet culture is, I think it's important to sort of set the parameters of what the dominant diet culture is. So I'm reading this book at the moment, which is by a dietitian called Christy Harrison. And I think where I always start, and when I'm learning about things, and especially when I came to learn about diet culture and the opposite to it, I did a lot of reading. There's so much out there. So I'm just going to read. It's a couple of sentences.
Go for it,
what Christy Harrison defines diet culture to be. So she says, diet culture is a system of beliefs that equates thinness, muscularity, and particular body shapes with health and moral virtue, promotes weight loss and body reshaping as a means of attaining higher status, demonizes certain foods and food groups while elevating others, and oppresses people who don't match its supposed picture of health, in quote marks. So diet culture is pervasive. It's sort of the water that we swim in. It's how we grow up, you know, obsessing with losing weight, the size of our body, the shape of our body, how we look. It's so pervasive that often we can't recognize it when it's present. It's everywhere in health and wellness and fitness and movement. It sort of presents as, you know, it's really problematic how it affects people, creates this cultural obsession with thinness and body size, and at the same time demonizes people in larger bodies and fatness to the extent that, you know, living in the world in a larger body is difficult and unpleasant, from everything from, you know, body image issues, eating disorders, those kinds of individual issues, through to like systemic discrimination, anti-fat bias, size discrimination, weight stigma, which affects, you know, health outcomes, whether people get jobs. And kind of my own introduction point was someone who I'm really close to in my life had to deal with not getting a job purely on the basis of her size, and because of a health and fitness test was required for this job, and based purely on her weight, it was decided that she wasn't healthy, which obviously, you know, weight does not indicate health or unhealth. She passed the fitness test with flying colours, but still was denied this job, or told if she wanted to have the job, she would have to lose weight until she came within like a satisfactory criteria. Thankfully, she didn't put herself through that. But obviously, as someone who was a lawyer at the time, used to kind of dealing with human rights discriminations of all different kinds, that was the first time that I was sort of presented with someone in my life who was like, this has happened as a result of my weight. And then I went down this huge rabbit hole of researching and learning about diet culture. So in terms of anti-diet culture, what I try to do in my classes, we kind of confine it to that, which is obviously my experience. I want to be mindful and make sure that I'm kind of not bringing any of that into the class. So I've got a little list of things that I do to try and avoid that. Let me see.
I love you've got your notebook. You're so prepared.
No, right. I'm like,
I've got my list here.
I'm someone with anxiety, so I have to be like prepared for every eventuality. Okay, so what is an anti-diet approach to movement? I've said recognizing that everybody is different, not expecting a room full of folks to all be doing the same thing. Encouraging and supporting body autonomy. So this looks like, as a coach, reminding folks that they know their body best. So I'll often say, you know your body better than I do. I want you to kind of listen to yourself before you listen to me. Offering options and modifications and encouraging folks to use them whilst being mindful of language. So, for example, we don't want to refer to modifications as regressions or progressions. Also, like, something that I'll say often in class, like, I'll talk about breathing and tummies, and when we're in a spin class, we're kind of sort of, we obviously lean forward over the handlebars a little bit, and that can be uncomfortable if you have a bigger belly. So kind of taking moments where you sit up and make space for your belly, take deep breaths, but also just sort of talking about things like bellies in a positive way and not saying that they need to be smaller or flatter or whatever, I think can be quite unusual. Like, I don't think, like, the explicitness of how anti-diet we are, I think, is special and different. And it just, I think it's noticeable. Like, I've had a lot of people say to me when they come to classes how healing and sort of nurturing and special it is to be in a room where there is visible body diversity, because I think when you go to fitness classes and studios, you know, if you stood outside and watched the people going in, there would be a lot of the same type of body going in and out. And I think that in itself creates anxiety and like difficulty with access to studios and movement and things that, as we've said, are so good for people's like mental health and joy and connection.
Yeah. And you want people, I think, like when you were exercising, I was talking to Beth Robinson, who I had on the show earlier, about this kind of idea that, you know, you want to show up for exercise feeling good about it, feeling positive about it, being your internal dialogue, being kind to your body, not the opposite. And, you know, you've spoken about a lot of things there that are very relatable as a woman growing up in the UK or in Western culture, you know, I think it's, we can all kind of relate to those things and see how they are, you know, so negative, how they don't support, how they are not helpful. Well, it's been really lovely to talk to you. The time has flown by and it's been really interesting as well. So thank you so much. And for people who would like to know more about your classes, Ash, where can they find out more?
So we have a website, yeah. ashridesLondonLDN.co.uk. I'm on Instagram, always talking about my classes on there, ashridesLondon, full London spelling. And then, yeah, our classes, we sell tickets on Eventbrite, so you can search for us on there as well.
Fantastic. You might see me at one. I'll be
That'd
there.
That'd be amazing.
Waving at you. I love a spin class and I haven't done one for ages. So, you know, and also I like singing along to songs. So
who doesn't?
There you go. Right. Thank you so much. That was the incredible Ash Newburn there, founder of Ash Rides London. Still to come on the show, I'm going to be speaking to former professional footballer Anton Ferdinand after this break.
Fubar Radio. Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my Yes I Yes sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either because obviously I can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
You're listening to Fubar Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google app stores. Yay! The Fubar Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
Is the sound of your mates alive? Is getting to more gigs this year and the next? Is the sound of saying, I got you, mate? Is the sound of mates enjoying even more of this? Is the sound of mates getting home instead of here? Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Malani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets? I went back to the bloke, said, yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do. What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
I'd love to ask for people that look at you, what's one tip you would say to someone that potentially wants to be a future Chancellor of the Exchequer?
I guess I would just encourage all people, but particularly young women, because I'm the first ever woman to be Chancellor of the Exchequer and the post has existed for 800 years.
Oh, wow.
Just to say to all young women and girls, there's no ceiling on your ambition. You can achieve whatever you want. Aim high, dream big, and you can realise your dreams too.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more from Gabby. This is What The Health.
You are listening to What The Health. Joining you this week, it's Clara Hermit in for Gabby Allen. Gabby is getting herself ready for Love Island All Stars. She will be donning a bikini. I'm sat here in a tracksuit. That's life and that is balance. So at this point of the show, it's time for my exercise of the week. And this one is very straightforward, is very simple. We all have access to it. And especially at this time of the year, I think it can be, you know, incredibly powerful and reassuring to know that this counts as exercise. And it is walking. I went for, I think it was about a 15K walk at the weekend. Not to say you have to do that. I was outside for hours in the rain. And there is something that I really like about walking, even if it's only a short walk, if it's 15 minutes or half an hour or 45 minutes, just because I'm outside, I'm breathing in air. Sometimes I'm around nature, depending on where I'm walking in London. But it has a really big impact on my mental health. It's gentle movement, and it's something that even if I'm not feeling great or very energetic, that I convince myself or that I know I can go and do. Also, looking at the old NHS website, it says when it comes to walking that sometimes it's overlooked as a form of exercise, but walking briskly can help build your stamina, burn excess calories, and make your heart healthier. So it's good for absolutely everything. And I think it is especially good for your mental health. So if you are looking to ease yourself into the new year, and if you are looking for something to put into maybe an already existing exercise regime, or if you're looking for something that you can do as part of your current exercise regime that just feels good for your body and your mind, because it can be a really good thing to do for recovery as well, active recovery, walking is the exercise. There you go. I'm not sure you were expecting that. Also, just to say at this point, because we have been talking a lot about New Year's resolutions on the show today, my goal for 2025 is, well, I've got three, to be able to do the worm. Just because I think, you know, that is a good party trick to have up your sleeve. You can, if you can do the worm, you can impress anybody. The next is be able to do one unassisted pull-up. So I'm working on that, currently assisted. But hopefully within a few months, I'll be pulling myself up here, there and everywhere. And the final one, if any of you know the dance, there's a song by Cameo called Candy, which comes on at a lot of parties. And my job is to learn that dance because I've been putting it off for years out of fear of embarrassment that I'm not good at learning dances. So that's my goals for this year, in case anyone was wondering. Not anyone asked, but now you know. So we are now going to be talking about listeners' questions. So lots of you get in touch. You ask your questions and I will do my very best to answer them with the knowledge that I have. And this one, by the way, if you would like to send a question to myself, to Gabby, you can DM us at WhatTheHealthShow on Instagram. That's where you send your questions. So Stella asks, I want to start going to the gym, new year, new me and everything. But I know that everyone will be going and doing the same. So the gyms are going to be busy. How do I gain the confidence to go as a newbie and where do I start? I hate that saying, new year, new me. I like the saying, new year, more me. More authentically you, doing more of the things that you like and enjoy. Look, the gym at this time of year will only be busy for a few weeks because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people will set themselves goals, they get themselves a gym membership, and within a couple of weeks, it all starts to fall off. So if you're particularly anxious about it, you don't have to go to the gym to do exercise. You can, of course, do home workouts. There are loads of home workouts on things like YouTube. You can also find a specific online coach who could do online workouts for you. And then I just mentioned, obviously, walking, running, things that you can do outside. But if you do really want to go to the gym, I think it's just about going in there. Because at the moment, I think what we do a lot is we see things on social media. We hear things from different people. But we don't know until we go and try it. So go to the gym. It might not actually be as busy as you think. It might be a lot easier than you think. And if your gym is one of those gyms that has classes, and it will have lots of different classes for different abilities to train different things, that can be a great thing to do because you can sign yourself up for a class. You can walk in there. You know there's going to be X amount of people. It's not going to be oversubscribed. And then once you have, you know, you're in the class, you're going to be surrounded by lots of people. You're going to have lots of encouragement as well. So it's going to be absolutely great. Stella, that is a great question, though. Thank you very much, because I'm sure that is going to be something that is impacting a lot of people. But right now, it's time to go to my next guest. And I am joining, or I'm being joined by Anton Ferdinand, who is a former professional footballer and Dancing on Ice contestant. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks, mate. It's lovely to have you in the studio today.
Thank you for having me.
Are you ready for some quick fire questions? Because that's how we start this. And then we'll talk about the Dancing on Ice stuff.
Okay, no problem.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so three words to describe yourself.
Cool.
Cool? Is that
calm.
One? No, cool, calm.
Collected.
That well-known saying.
Yeah.
Upper or lower body day?
Upper.
Yeah? Every time. But don't miss out the legs, otherwise you end up looking like a triangle.
No, football. Because of football. Oh. Like, since I've retired from football, I don't do no legs. I only do upper body.
Oh, do you? So yeah. You are a triangle. How are you going to get on with dancing on ice? Has it been a problem so far?
No, it's actually been all right.
Okay.
Muscle memory, innit?
Okay.
Comes back.
Also, I guess on dancing on ice, because you're the guy, you might have to do a lot of lifting.
Exactly that.
So it's helpful. Workout in the morning or the evening?
Morning.
Every time?
Yeah.
Get it out of the way. What's your go-to cheat meal?
My go-to cheat meal, Caribbean food.
What though? You've got to be a bit more specific.
Oxtail rice and peas planting.
You knew straight away.
100%, yeah.
Knew straight away. Mine used to be curry goat before I was vegan. But not anymore. Dream workout partner.
Cool. Gabby.
There you go. She's on Love Island. Wait till she gets back and then you'll be all right.
Yep.
What's your workout anthem?
It all depends, isn't it? It all depends for me. Sugar. What would it be?
Come on, there's got to be a song that you think about that gets you hype, that gets you in the mood to work out. Something. We've lost him.
You have lost me.
You've got going into the files now, the archives.
Exactly that. Tina Moore, Never Gonna Let You Go.
Oh, that's a great one. There you go. We'll take it. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Right, now it's time to get into the serious stuff because you are going to be a contestant on Dancing on Ice. Before I ask you anything else, prior to the show, could you ice skate?
No. No, I could ghetto skate, but like from back in the day, you know, like when we used to go Streatham ice rink on the 6 weeks holidays and get on there, try and go as fast as you can, try and run before you could walk, and try and, like, you know, when you spray the side, try and spray the sides or hit the sides, and that's what I used to do.
A bit like, you're almost like ice hockey, you know, kind of going with that mindset.
Yeah. But like, it's so far away from the actual, that doing it like that, you know, they need elegance, they need almost like ballet finishes, strong finishes, and that to me was alien.
Was?
Yeah.
I like the was though, that's sounding good.
Yeah.
What was your first reaction when you got the call from Dancing on Ice? Did you know straight away that you wanted to do it, or did you think, I could end up with two broken legs?
Yeah, it wasn't a yes straight away. It wasn't. And I went and done the practical audition.
Yeah, tell us about what's the process like then? You have to go and so they ask you.
We had a call on Zoom, as everything's on Zoom nowadays.
Yeah.
Had a Zoom call, spoke with the producers, and then got the nod to have a practical audition, and went and met the coach, who's my coach now, Rob, who's fantastic. Like, he's unbelievable. And us having a good camaraderie, getting on, and him showing confidence in me. And when I stepped on the ice, I was shaky, but like, he calmed my nerves and calmed me really, really quickly. And really through him and also the challenge that I was going to be up against, so far at my comfort zone. And then the thought of seeing my daughter's face.
Aww.
When telling her that I'm going to be doing it and giving her something to shout about other than what my boys have got to shout about to do with football. Not that she doesn't shout about it, because she does, but just seeing something that she would love to see me do, and all them things put together made it a yes for me.
When you went to do the audition, did you do the ghetto skating then? Were you like, look, I can do this, kind of going?
You know, I hadn't been skating for so long, since like I was a kid.
Like Bambi on ice.
Yeah, so like, I hadn't been, because when you're playing football, you're not allowed to do that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because of the insurance and everything. So I hadn't been on the ice for years. So I felt like I'd never done it before. You know, and I stepped, and obviously the boots that you get at an ice rink, they're not sharp.
Yeah.
Compared to, they are, but they're not sharp compared to the ones that we have to wear now.
So you're like,
yeah, like it was crazy.
I bet you must have gained a lot of bruises during this process.
Do you know what? I have and I haven't. I've got a knack of like jumping out of a fall. So if I'm going to fall, I'll do like a hop, skip, jump to get out of it. That doesn't mean I haven't fallen. I have, you know, especially when trying to do like twizzle spins on one leg and stuff like that. I've tried to do them, and my legs have gone and my feet have gone over my head, so I have fallen. But falling is part of the process.
Falling is part of the process, and you've got to get back up. So how have the rehearsals been going, all in all? Because like you started off by saying, this is a little bit of an alien concept, isn't it? Because it's not just about being able to skate, it's also the kind of artistic side of it, right? Because you're going to get points.
Yep. That's what scares me. It's the you've got to remember, I'm going on to a surface that I'm almost learning how to walk again, you know, and then you've got to put rhythm involved in it. Like you said, the artistic side of it, and try and make sure you're on point to a beat. So you have to be.
Have you got rhythm?
I'm all right.
Yeah, okay.
I'm all right.
You had to think about it, though.
But, you know, I'm all right, yeah. Like, well, I should have, considering my... I've got sisters that are twins, are in the West End in theatre, so I'd like to think I have, yeah.
Yeah, but just because they have.
Listen, I think it runs through the family, I'll be honest.
So you're all right. So yeah. You're in rehearsals, you're having to learn all of these new things and, like, take it on board. But are you, you know, you're feeling confident, you've been enjoying rehearsals?
Yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it. And I think that's the main thing. I spoke with Ryan Thomas, who was last year's winner, who'd done it. And I said to him, I'm a bit anxious on, like, obviously, the week leading up to the first live on Sunday. Bit anxious because... as he will know, as I know, one wrong step in terms of it could be on the outside edge, but you're meant to be on the inside edge, which is like, that's skating jargon, I'm saying. But if you're on the wrong edge, it could be a problem because it could change, it could mess up the whole routine. So you've got so much to think about. And he just said, Anton, you've won just by accepting it because you're so far out of your comfort zone. And when he said it to him, it was almost like, yeah, you're right. But in the competitor in me goes, yeah, that's right, but... I ain't even got through week one yet.
Yeah.
You know, so like, at the moment, I'm a bit up and down.
Yeah, but I think you're going to be great. I think you'll be good. But it's all the things that you don't think about. Because when you watch people do ice skating, obviously, when they start doing spins and stuff like that, you're like, whoa. But even people who are really good at it, there's so much you don't even consider because they make it look so easy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing, isn't it? And yeah. So just hearing you talk about all of these different things, it's like, oh my God, it could be that easy to kind of mess it up. But I guess it could be, right?
It is. You're always, like I said, you're one wrong placement of your foot away from ruining the whole routine. And it's not like it's not like I can go, oh, can we start again? It's live. You got one shot at it, and that is it. And I have to keep pinching myself because when you speak with the pros, and the pros that, like, I dance with Annette, and when I speak to Annette, she's practiced all her life, you know, like 8, 9, 10 years before, like, being a champion and be doing well in her graft, you
and
know?
Now she's got to dance with you.
Exactly. And I don't want to let her down.
Yeah,
you know, I don't want to let her down because I understand, being a professional, when you bring somebody into your field, like, you still have that competitive edge in you, and you because it's your field, you want to do well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but sometimes it's hard because the person that you're bringing in don't quite understand it or don't quite have the fire that you have for that sport or that whatever you're doing. But they've been, some people that compete takes 8, 9 years to get to that place.
How long have you had in rehearsals? How long have you got?
2.5 months.
But it's still quite a long time, isn't it? Two and a half months. No,
it isn't.
To make up for 9 or 10 years, maybe
exactly.
Not.
Exactly. So I have to keep pinching myself and think, you know what? When I put it into perspective, I'm actually doing all right.
Yeah, but you must have got a lot better in 2.5 months.
I have. I have got a lot better, but I always chase being better. Like, I'm very hard on myself.
Yeah, but that's probably good for this, isn't it? And for Annette, because she probably appreciates that. The fact that you're a professional athlete,
yeah,
you know, then means that there are certain aspects that you can both relate to.
For sure. That's the first thing I said. Like, if I'm doing something wrong, don't be afraid to tell me. If I'm doing something terrible, do not be afraid to, like, give it to me and tell me, give me it straight, like, because that's what I respond well to, you know, and because that's what my upbringing in football was. Like, if you've done something wrong, you got told, you do it again, you're an idiot. Like, keep, like, but you have to keep repeating to be able to perfect. You'll never be perfect, but to get better, I should say.
Have you been and done any kind of, like, extra sessions on your own? Because you mentioned your daughter then. Have you kind of gone, oh, look, let's go ice skating, and then shown off your skills a little bit?
Yeah, I've taken her on the ice.
Yeah.
Along with my older son, I've taken him on the ice. They absolutely love it. I'd love my daughter to get into it, if I'm honest. The discipline side of it, for me, as a parent, I'd love my daughter to get into it. And she's only 7, so she's got no fear at the moment. And she's theatrical. She loves ballet. She loves dance. So I think it could be ideal for her.
Yeah, it sounds like she's got all the things that she needs to be, well, to follow in your, not footsteps, skate steps, I guess, is the question. Okay, so What has been the most challenging part of this experience for you?
The most challenging part of this experience for me has to be when you're not getting something, you know. So for the first month, I was just with Rob, the coach, without, and I hadn't met Annette yet. And we were going through the fundamentals of skating, forward crossovers, backward crossovers. And the first time I'd done crossovers, one way I was really, really good, and the other way I was terrible.
That's often the way it goes, isn't
and
it?
And I couldn't fathom it. I couldn't work out why. And it took the whole session for me to, and even in towards the end of the session, I still didn't feel great.
Yeah, but you were getting there. Sorry to cut you there. We will continue this chat. But I've been Clara Hermit. This has been What the Health. I will be back with you next week at the same time. And thank you to all of my guests who have joined me on the show. It's been a brilliant one. And I'll chat to you soon.